Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. All this week on the show, we've been covering the Democratic National Convention and hearing from voters, public officials, and party leaders around the state. Last night, Kamala Harris formally accepted the nomination to be the Democratic candidate for Vice President of the United States. She's the first Black woman and woman of Asian descent to be nominated for Vice President from a major political party, at least. She's also only ever the second Black woman to serve in the United States Senate. Later in the show, we're going to hear from the first Black woman to serve in the United States Senate, Senator Carol Mosley Braun, who was elected to represent Illinois in 1992 and served from 93 to 99. She also went on to be President Clinton's ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa. We are hoping and planning to bring you a conversation with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin shortly. We're still trying to connect with him in the era of Zoom. Oh, I understand that Senator Durbin is with us now. Senator Durbin, welcome back to the 21st, and thank you for being here today.
Good to be with you.
And listeners, I want to remind you, the phone lines are always open, 800-222-9455. If you have a question for Senator Durbin, you can join the conversation by giving us a call, 800-222-9455. Senator, we've heard throughout our coverage of the convention this week that there are factions of the Democratic Party who are maybe a little less enthusiastic about the Biden-Harris ticket than they might have been about, say, a Sanders-Ocasio-Cortez ticket, constitutional age limits notwithstanding. Of course, many others are excited, but what effect will this have on down-ticket races?
I don't think it's going to have the impact that it's had in previous years, because I think we are all united across the spectrum of the Democratic Party in our belief that the administration of Donald Trump has to come to an end. And what I've seen is an extraordinary outpouring of support, not just from Senator Sanders, but the congresswoman from New York. It's an indication to me they understand the gravity of the moment, that there is a much better chance for the progressive agenda under President Joe Biden and Kamala Harris than there ever would be under Trump and Pence.
You know, I want to also ask about one of the big issues this week that I know you have been following closely is the U.S. Postal Service. And it's among the big non-convention stories we're following. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy has said he's suspending cost-cutting measures that had been put in place until at least after the 2020 election. I understand he's going to be testifying before the Senate soon. Are you concerned still about the U.S. Postal Service's ability to handle the surge in mail-in voting we're expecting to see this year?
Well, of course I am, and there's good reason for it. Along comes a Postmaster General, Mr. DeJoy, who is a political supporter, a generous political supporter of President Trump, who has little or no experience when it comes to the post office. He becomes a Postmaster General and announces he's going to take care of the problems of the Postal Service as he sees them, and really use corporate standards, company standards, to create a new postal service. May I remind Postmaster General DeJoy, it is the Postal Service. It is not the Postal Company. And it's a service for Americans that 90% of us have a favorable view of. Sure, it has its problems, and we've known them in the past, but we're proud of the U.S. Post Office and what it has meant to America throughout its history. And then on the heels of this announced changeover in the Post Office comes the President of the United States questioning whether or not we can trust the accuracy and reliability of mail-in ballots. He says, you know, they're just fraught with fraud and misuse. Well, it turns out he uses a mail-in ballot to send in his own voting choices to the state of Florida. And it turns out as well that it isn't just blue states like Oregon and perhaps purple states like Colorado, but absolutely red states like Utah that have been using mail-in ballots almost exclusively for long periods of time without any complaints. You put these together and you wonder, is this president going to use the new political friend at the Postal Service to try to manipulate the operations of the Postal Service in the closing weeks of the election? Naturally, there's a concern across America. Of course, I've addressed this as a political animal. When you ask most Americans, they say, I'm worried about getting my medications in the mail. Sure. What's happening to my postal service? So it's become a national issue.
I want to ask about the Senator, your colleague, Senator Susan Collins, a Republican of Maine, is reportedly the subject of political campaign ads, sort of taking her to task for supporting the 2006 Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act. Rough summary is, as I understand it, is that it put tough requirements on the Postal Service to fund its pensions 75 years out, unique among federal agencies. Some are saying that helped pave the way for the Postal Service's problems today. Of course, you were also a sponsor of that legislation. Is the attack on Collins fair?
Well, I can tell you what we did. We were abundantly cautious when it came to the future of the retirement system in the Postal Service and required of them things that are not required of most federal agencies. And it has created a real economic hardship. Let me be very blunt about that. As they've tried to match the funding requirements of the law and maintain their operations, there have been some real problems over the years. That's why I support what Nancy Pelosi did 3 months ago in the House of Representatives in the HEROES Act, putting a $25 billion helping hand to the Postal Service. They've been hit hard by this pandemic, and they've seen a decline in service and revenue that's been reflected many times in decisions that have to be made. Giving them a helping hand at this point would help them through this retirement burden, as well as put them back on track to do the service that we expect across America. So yes, it was a tough requirement. We ought to take a look at it in the future and see if it's still realistic or whether it's too tough. But for the time being, let's save that debate for a new Congress. Let's give the $25 billion in the HEROES Act to the Postal Service.
And what is the holdup with that? I mean, do you think that's going to break loose in the Senate now? I mean, we've since President Trump basically connected his distaste for this extra funding for the or funding for the Postal Service to his, you know, dislike of mail-in balloting. It seems like a lot of Republicans have said that they would support additional funding. Do you think it's going to break loose, or is it still part of the broader discussion that's being held up for another round of stimulus?
The holdup in this helping hand for the Postal Service comes down to two people, Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell. If and when they realize that the Postal Service needs a helping hand, this money will be part of a compromise that can be enacted in short order. But they're just coming to the realization that they grabbed the third rail in American politics here. When they started cutting back in the Postal Service, and you found half of our veterans saying, wait a minute, what about the medications that we get in the mail? You know, it's not just about ballots, Mr. Politician. It's about my pills that I need and I'm counting on. So the public reaction against the Republicans holding up this money has been so strong that they're starting to come around. The new Postmaster General says, wait a minute, no changes, no reforms until after the election. The president's saying, well, what made you think I ever wanted to create a problem for the Postal Service? Mitch McConnell goes back to Kentucky, and every time he turns around, somebody said, what about my post office here? It's critical to a state, particularly in rural areas. So I think they're coming around to the belief they made a big mistake in holding up that money. It should be part of the package. We ought to enact it as quickly as we can.
If listeners are just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who is going to be the highest ranking Illinois official on the ballot this November. He's running against Republican nominee, former Lake County Sheriff Mark Curran. Should note to listeners, we will be trying to bring you a conversation with his opponent in the future. But this is DNC week. Politics is the focus. And something that has struck me about some of the things we've heard out of the Democratic convention this week, Senator, and both from President Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama this week, made a case for President Trump being out of his depth, incompetent and disinterested, I think was the message. I wonder, and I was talking to a political journalist friend of mine, wondering if it's essentially a reprise of the 2016 message that President Trump is unfit, doubling down on that. And that strategy ultimately did not work in 2016. Do you think it works this year? What's changed?
I do. The president's performance for 3.5 years has made the difference. You know, when you take a look at it, the American people, 3 out of 4 say that they're worried that things are going to get worse. And when it comes to this president and this pandemic, they say the following. He told us it wasn't going to be serious, and we've lost 170,000 Americans. He comes up with these wacky medical quackery theories of how to treat this virus instead of listening to the experts. When it comes to the basics of what he should be asking us to do as a nation to deal with it, like wearing a mask, it becomes a big political and personal issue for him, as if he's ever going to be shown on camera wearing a mask, how that may diminish him. He's made these fighting words across America as to whether or not we're going to pull together. People arguing with one another in grocery stores about wearing masks. All of the rhetoric that we've heard about reopening the economy months ago, which would have been a disaster. I mean, it's a turmoil that the president has willingly participated in. Instead of following the medical experts and taking this seriously, he's gone off on these political tangents about liberate Wisconsin, liberate Michigan, all the rest of these things. He's proven the case when it comes to dealing with one of the most serious challenges of our time, or maybe in our history. This president has not been up to the challenge.
Something else I've heard from multiple Democrats recently, up to and including President Obama's speech last night, is that the party doesn't just need to win, it needs to win overwhelmingly. What's that about?
Well, it's about getting something done. I am sick and tired of coming to work in Washington and watching the Mitch McConnell Senate do virtually nothing. Last year, in the calendar year 2019, we considered on the floor of the U.S. United States Senate 22 amendments. 22. Six of them by Rand Paul of Kentucky that were throwaway amendments, basically either vote up or down or I won't let you go home for the weekend. 22 amendments in the entire year. The activity of the United States Senate is ground to a halt. There are things that need to be done in this country. We need to have, as I mentioned earlier, focus on the coronavirus testing, for goodness sakes. We now have a breakthrough Illinois Shield saliva test. It was done at the university level instead of being a national initiative, which it should be. We need breakthroughs on therapies and vaccines and helping schools to reopen. These are things that we should be moving on in Congress. Hundreds of bills are piled up on Mitch McConnell's desk, passed in the House that he won't even consider. All he wants to do is to fill the federal courts with people who meet his ideological political test.
Are you prepared to eliminate the filibuster?
I can tell you it's on the table. What I'm prepared to do is say the Senate has got to become a functioning body that reflects the needs of America and responds to them. That's what I'm concerned with. The filibuster itself may be part of that conversation.
One more big issue I want to talk about, and we've got about 3 minutes left in our conversation, but the quest for racial justice, racial equity, is obviously a huge issue this year. Criminal justice reform is part of that. The Black Lives Matter movement has come to such prominence. We saw in Senator Elizabeth Warren's speech from a classroom last night. People noted in the background she had the sort of block letters BLM spelled out over her shoulder, subtly, but there. Something you've talked about in the past in your career in Congress, recently you said to the Chicago Bar Association that you regret your vote on the 94 crime bill and the war on drugs. Can you talk about that?
I can tell you we were scared to death. Along came this new narcotic called crack cocaine, dirt cheap, highly addictive, and destroyed the fetus that a mother might be carrying. We reacted. We overreacted. We imposed standards, criminal sentencing standards of 100-to-1 crack cocaine over powder cocaine. We were going to really send a message loud and clear to all of America. And people, liberal and conservative, were all supporting it because we had to do something and do it fast. Lynn Bias just died from an overdose, University of Maryland basketball star. There was a feeling we had to move and move quickly. Well, we did. And the net result of it was exactly the opposite of what we wanted. Instead of the number of addicts going down, it went up. Instead of the price of the product going up, it went down. And we filled the prisons in the next 20 years, primarily with African Americans. It was a failed experiment in dealing with the war on drugs. And I've spent the last 10 years in the United States Senate trying to undo the damage with two criminal sentencing reforms, one signed by President Obama, the second signed by President Trump, to make sure that we had more justice when it came to criminal sentencing. And took away the mandatory minimums in many instances where they were being dramatically abused.
Last thing I want to ask you about, there's another politician in Illinois who's been in the news lately, who's had a long career, and that is party chairman Michael Madigan, also Speaker of the Illinois House. Do you think he should remain in his job in light of the ongoing federal investigation? And is he a net positive or a net negative for Illinois Democrats?
I play a different role than most. Senator Tammy Duckworth and I had the responsibility of choosing the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, John Lush, Republican by background, but a man of real professional integrity, a person who cleared our a panel that interviewed him with the highest marks. We have been confident in what he has done. We both said to him, now, Mr. U.S. Attorney, do your job without interference from these politicians. We are going to stand by the sidelines and watch to see that you do it right. But we're not going to be second guessing you, criticizing you, or praising you. Just do what you're supposed to do. We still have the highest confidence in him. And we've kind of held back, waiting to see how this will unfold. I can tell you, of course, it results in questions to me and many other Democrats across the state about whether the speaker is going to be charged with a crime and what the reaction might be. But at this point, we're going to let the process unfold.
So, just 10 seconds remaining, but I mean, you basically, you're not taking a position then on whether Madigan should remain or should go.
We are intentionally leaving this in the hands of this professional U.S. attorney who we believe has done a good job. At this point, there are no charges have been filed directly against the Speaker of the Illinois House. We'll wait to see what happens after that.
Senator Dick Durbin is the senior U.S. Senator from Illinois. Senator, thank you for your time.
Thank you, too.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.